What's up, champs? Welcome to another episode of the Short Shifts Fantasy Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Keeping Carlson. I'm your host, Jeremy Brasillo, and joining me tonight, my pal and yours, Shams Benamor. Shams, how are you doing on this Thursday evening? This Halloween Thursday evening?
I'm doing okay, just kind of going through my lineups and trying to see which of my players are being tricks or treats now that we have a month through the season that we could start making some definite decisions on, as definite as you can with a month into the season.
Well, speaking of tricks and treats, here's a little trick to watch out for. There's a 2 p.m. Eastern game on a Friday tomorrow. So just want everyone who is listening to this on their Friday morning commute, you only have until 2 p.m. Eastern or 11 a.m. Pacific to set your lineups for Florida and Dallas. They also have an early game on Saturday. I think it's a noon Eastern game, so not as early, but still kind of before you may set your lineups if you're checking in early. So be aware of that. Another one that definitely is not a treat, Connor McDavid got some clarity on his injury. He's out 2 to 3 weeks. Sounds like a high ankle sprain, which is a lot less scary in hockey than it is for those of you who play fantasy football or fantasy basketball, but still not great. What's the fallout here, Shams?
Well, the dance now is that we have to deal with kind of a struggling team losing the best player in the NHL, but funnily enough, they are currently winning 3-1 against UC Saros. So, of course, you take out McDavid and they start turning it on. The top line is Podkozin, Draisaitl, and Arvidsson, with Draisaitl as the center. And then the second line is Skinner, RNH, and Hyman, with RNH in the center. So while, of course, McDavid is a huge loss, it still has some skill there with Hyman being able to be on the second line. And Arvidsson is no slouch if you remember him from his LA days. So that Draisaitl line has two of the three goals so far, so looking good for him. And on the top power play, we have, and this is the interesting one, I was pumping up Arvidsson, but it's actually Ekholm that's on the power play one. It's Draisaitl, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Hyman, Ekholm, and Bouchard on power play one. So interestingly enough, I think we'll have to see how you feel about Arvidsson getting to play with Draisaitl some more, but we'll kind of have to see what it means for the team, because while they're winning this day, last season they played 6 games without McDavid. They only won one of them. So hopefully they do a little bit better this year compared to last year.
And if you may remember in the past, Leon Draisaitl has gone nuclear in some of the games without Connor McDavid in there. So the fact that he has 2 points in half of a game today, probably not that much of a surprise. Like, it's almost like he puts the team on his back when McDavid isn't there. Next up, we have an interesting situation with Kevin Fiala, one of the darlings of the Los Angeles team. What kind of hot water did this guy get himself into?
So first, he ended up getting benched against Utah because he got 2 penalties, and the second one was a cross check, which was, I guess, just enough to make the coach just sit him for the rest of the game. And then there were some rumors about, hey, what's going to happen with him? The Sharks are coming up. Are they going to bench him to show who's boss? And then he gets benched. He's not even active for the Sharks game, but it's not because of the penalties. It's because he missed a team meeting, which supposedly to his excuse was his iPad alarm messed up, so he missed it. Now, we could joke and laugh about this is because both the coach and Fiala have come up and said it's water under the bridge and are going forward. And this is something that you might not remember, but last year, maybe not to this extreme, they did have kind of a spat where he did get benched. And the word was from the beat reporters, he quote unquote responded well. So I think it's just that kind of guy that, might be a little bit of a, not the perfect soldier that might need a kick to the side to just be reminded to who's boss. And it looks like that's the case here, but I wouldn't be really changing my thoughts on him overall.
Speaking of responding well, the game that he got scratched for was Monday. On Tuesday, he comes back with a goal and an assist against Vegas. So it seems like he responded well. Kind of sad that the iPad alarm is what does him in. Like, that's a rookie mistake for a guy who has over 500 games and close to 10 seasons in the NHL. Hopefully he learns from it. Seems like they're all being professional about it, so I'm not really worried as a fantasy manager or a Los Angeles fan. Next up, we had a trade. Timothy Liljegren, the disgruntled Toronto defenseman, got moved to San Jose, where he should get some playing time. And in return, Toronto got a handful of draft picks and Matt Benning, who is like your prototypical seventh defenseman. There was talks of him being on the move to either Colorado or Toronto or one of those eventual playoff-bound teams. What do you think is going to happen with Liljegren in San Jose? Does he have power play one upside? Is he going to be playing 20, 23 minutes a night like Wallman is? I honestly think he's their second-best defenseman now and will be used in that way. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, basically the way I look at it is that I'm blanking out on who's the D partner they want to replace, but they're looking for a puck-moving defenseman on the second pair. So what I think is going to happen is that while maybe that he's not maybe a worry on taking maybe the power play one, we'll have to wait and see. There's no word about that. But what I think is going to happen is that they're not going to have to worry about putting Walbin out so much on the offensive situations now that they have a second pair that they could depend on a little bit more and then maybe try to shelter the third. So my idea is from this is that basically all of the offensive players, the forwards, are going to get a bump now that there's at least a second person on the blue line that can move the puck. And then that might end up with some more even strength situations. And then whoever's on the second power play gets a small boost. And then overall, I think there's just going to be a small shade on how Walbin is, because I'm guessing that he's going to at least keep the top power play for now. And then Jack Thompson's probably going to stay in the AHL to, you know, get his reps in. And then Walbin is probably just going to be losing that even strength time and maybe not have to be required to be out there for the majority of the game.
I think your point about Jack Thompson ending up back in the AHL is probably right. It's pretty clear that he was getting sheltered hard. He was playing like 13 to 15 minutes a night, and five of them were on the power play. Not a sustainable thing for a young defenseman. I think he's going to eventually be a part of that team, but just not now. I almost wonder if they pair Liljegren and Walbin at even strength to get one of those, like, not superpower units, because, I mean, this isn't a... Makar and Taze or anything, but get two of their higher quality players together. And I also think you're right, it may cut Walman's minutes, especially on the power play. Like, you don't want to run a defenseman 25 minutes a night if he's not capable of doing that. So even shaving a little bit of ice time off will help the Sharks and hurt Walman fantasy owners. But I actually think we have a little bit more on Walbin later, so I digress. Next up, we have some injury updates. A plethora of updates from the Av Shams. Which ones are fantasy relevant?
So the first one is that everyone's fantasy darling that they got off the waiver wire, Ross Colton, is out for 6 to 8 weeks with a broken foot. So that one is, you know, just have to put him in your IR and sit on your hands until he comes back. However, with his loss, while not happening right away, we have situation where it's Lehkonen is set to potentially come back as early as Tuesday, and also that we have Nichushkin potentially coming back into like a practice situation with the team, and then potentially be in a situation where, at least from what I'm seeing with the news of him, is that I have a feeling that most likely once his suspension is over, I haven't seen any news where there's any reason to be concerned about him not being reinstated, but once it's done, that he'll be in a position to play. Now, we don't know about where he's going to be in the lineup, but interestingly enough, they did have practice with Lehkonen, and he was actually on the third line with Kelly, and Kovalenko took the winger spot that the D-man was in last game, and then Ivan was with Middlestat and O'Connor on the second line, and Kiravanta stayed on that top line with McKinnon and Rantanen. They didn't do any power play, so we don't know how that is, but the top nine is still relatively the same, even when Luckydid's coming back. Probably, if I wouldn't be surprised if they're just kind of putting him in it softly, and then he'll probably climb into top six sooner or later. But at the very least, he's not there at the start.
With Luckydid also, I wonder if he's going to end up on power play one. There's one obvious spot on power play one, like Ivan, the value is trending down. If you have him for this week and got the goal in the six shots yesterday, great. But I actually wonder, he may not be on this team in 3 weeks. Like, he actually may be down to the AHL to play bigger minutes instead of playing third or fourth line minutes in the NHL. Nichushkin probably goes on to power play one. But with Lehkonen, I actually wonder if Casey Mittelstadt has done enough to keep the power play one role. He has looked really good as a distributor. That power play has been pretty dangerous, and I think Mittelstadt is actually a large part of why it's been dangerous from the games I've watched. That's something to monitor. And Nichushkin, I forget if you said the dates, but sounds like he can jump right into the lineup on November 13th or November 15th, which is less than 2 weeks away. Great move for anybody who correctly guessed that Yahoo was going to let us put him in the IR and stashed him for 4 weeks. Like, I would have been a lot more interested had I known he was only out for 5 weeks. I kind of expected this was going to linger and there was going to be, you know, ramp up time and all that. So I'm kicking myself for not getting him in any of my leagues. For those of you who did, congrats. Not much else to say. Next injury, Freddie Anderson is week to week. So Pyotr Kochetkov is playing majority of the games, I assume. I think it was the backup Spencer Martin who they called up, but they aren't going to go 50-50 with Spencer Martin. Kochetkov has a handful of points today as Carolina is lighting up Boston. But my complaint with Carolina goalies is that Carolina suppresses shots like nobody's business. And he very well could give up 3 goals on 20 shots. And at that point, if you lose the game, you may have a bad goalie start. And if you win the game, you only get like 6 points. I haven't done the math, but all I know is Carolina goalies are frustrating to own for how good of a team it is. Like, you think that's a slam dunk, and it isn't. I guess add Kochetkov, he's available. Like, you want a starting goalie on a good team, but it's going to be frustrating.
For example, right now, he is literally getting you 0.3 points in Kochetkov. He has 13 shots against him in total, and he let 2 of them in. So you're going to keep getting basically all of your points from the win. Right now, there's still about like 8 minutes left. So hell, if a goal goes in, you'd be using the win points to get to 0. So just kind of a highlight. Now, Boston is in a completely different headspace right now, so it's not always going to be like that. But this is a perfect example of why I have generally avoided streaming Cade's goalies. And then the dance of having one with a volume might be a little bit different, but I'm 100% with you.
Yeah, that's it's not a fun team to have a goalie from. I'd actually almost rather have a goalie from San Jose or Chicago or, well, Anaheim's cheating at this point, because I think Lucas Dostal, with how he's performing today, I believe now has the most fantasy points among all goalies. That is more than Connor Hellebuck, who has played the same number of games. A kind of crazy fact there. One last injury update. Jacob Chychrun for Washington is day-to-day. I don't actually remember what happened, but they play both Saturday and Sunday. No determination on if he's going to play then. He is sitting today's game, though. And Matt Roy is getting real close, quotes. I don't know if Matt Roy or Matt Waugh, whichever pronunciation he uses, is fantasy relevant. Chychrun certainly had been pretty good for Washington. Not much else to say there for me. With that, let's go to our short ad break.
The quest for the Stanley Cup has begun. The puck's dropped on the 24-25 season. Get in on all the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. It's super easy for first-timers to get started. Try betting on something simple, like picking a team to win. Go to DraftKings Sportsbook app, select your team, and place your first bet. I recall I did a show with Victor at the start of the season talking about Calder candidates. Taking a look at the updated odds now, it's Matvei Michkov as the clear runaway favorite, according to DraftKings Sportsbook. That was my prediction, just saying. But of course, that means good odds on other players if you think that they'll do it. And if you're new to DraftKings, listen up. New customers bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. That's code THPN. Stands for the Hockey Podcast Network, for new customers to get $200 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/ice.
Going to a live sporting event, it's the best. It's so fun. I just went to the Toronto Raptors season opener last week. At least it started really exciting. The fans were crazy. It was a really fun time. But of course, then they stunk and lost. But of course, I'm telling you all this because I want to talk about our friends over at Game Time, a place to buy tickets to go and experience live sporting events, including hockey games or concerts or shows or whatever for yourself. Game Time has a new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. Game Time Picks filters out all the fluff and shows you only incredible deals on great seats so you don't have to waste time searching through thousands of tickets. I thought just for fun, I'd take a look at the cost to go see a game in Washington, the Washington Capitals. Just going to be cool to watch this OV chasing the record. Man, these ticket prices are crazy. I'm like, if you want to see the Montreal Canadiens at the Capitals on October 31st, it's next Thursday. It says there's tickets from $10, $10 plus over on Game Time. Or if you want to get a super deal on a really good seat, I'm seeing $67. It shows you super deal. You can actually get filters by like how good of a deal it is, what percent off it is off of the typical price you'd expect for a ticket like that. It's really handy. Man, I feel like it might be cheaper for me to like fly to Washington and go see this Habs Capitals game versus, you know, seeing the same game over in Montreal. But hey, that's an option to you with our friends at Game Time. They also have some other really cool features. I really like the Game Time guarantee. You're guaranteed the best price. And if you find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time Picks. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code THPN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code THPN for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time!
Welcome back, everyone. Now let's take you through some hot and cold streaks that we've identified, including some team-wide cold streaks, just because we feel like giving you that treat on this Halloween night. First one, Drake Batherson has been a treat to own. 9 points in his last 5 games, actually has 12 points in 9 total, which is after people kind of panicked because he went pointless in his first 2, then had a 3-point game in his 3rd game, and then pointless in the 4th game. But since then, like I said, 9 points in 5 games. I will say the shot totals are concerning. In those 9 games, he has a 7-shot game, a 4-shot game, a 2-shot game, and every other game, all 6 other games, he has only 1 shot. That's not sustainable for a player of Batherson's quality. He's also benefiting from a red-hot power play. Like, that Ottawa unit looks incredible. I think they're overheating right now. I don't think they can score. I forget what their percentage is, but it's something insane. I feel like Brady and Stützle and Batherson and Norris are scoring power play points every single game and often multiple of them. I think my take is Batherson is hot, but probably a bit too hot right now. What do you think, Shams?
Now, while I would be in agreement with you mostly on basically all of that, I'm still really just happy with him in general because I am in love with that even strength line. I couldn't imagine how much of an effect of moving Giroux down to that line to be with Norris and Batherson would have an effect. Is that I have a feeling is that off the top of my head, I'm not sure how many of the points, I don't think they're actually as a team doing that well on even strength. So I have a feeling that it won't be, you know, 1-for-1, but I feel like some of the points lost from the power play will be recovered from even strength, and then just having that line and having that be your second line. So it's not even, you know, being glued on because you have Stützle and Tkachuk on a on their top line. I am just really high and just missing out that I think I was talking in our ally chat about Giroux being like, don't worry about him. He got dropped. And it's like, he's not going to be much. He's now on the second line. And now it's just completely different. I might be, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, but I just love that line so much. I want a piece of anyone on it.
Absolutely. I would love to be able to snipe Drake Batherson or Claude Giroux from an unwary manager, but I don't think that's going to happen until they cool off. While you were talking, I looked up their power play. Their power play is currently second in the league, running at 42.9%. Only team ahead of them is Winnipeg at 44.8%. That's kind of incredible. And the team that I mentioned earlier, who had a really good power play, Colorado, is third at 35.1%. Next up, a guy that we think you have permission to drop if you're holding him. Why don't you tell us about our Florida Panther trick here?
Evan Rodriguez, sadly, is a fan of mine from last year because he was sniffing the top power play, but now he's not anywhere close to that. He's getting top 6 minutes with Barkov and Reinhardt, which you think would be a golden time, but he only has 3 points and 23 shots in 11 games. That's not enough to really pull his weight. And right now he only has 2 games this week because of the team being in Finland. So with the good chance that the Saturday is probably stacked, so he's only giving you one, is that the way I look at Evan Rodriguez is that I know the name. He had some big play in different places or even with the team last year, is that I don't think anyone was jumping for Lusterainen when he was with a red-hot Lundell and with Reinhardt when Barkov was out. So the way I look at it is that Evan Rodriguez is basically the identical of that, playing with a very strong center in Reinhardt, but not getting any power play one time, and is clearly a third wheel that's not shooting a lot. So maybe in a week where you have like a really nice streaming schedule, maybe sneak him in, but you're free to cut him. He's not a core player of your fantasy team.
And I stand corrected a bit. I looked up the Cupful rostership here. Only 4% owned. So if you're one of the two people who own Evan Rodriguez, you should consider cutting him. If not, you guys are smarter than us. You guys were on top of this one. I find that people like to hold on to first line players from really good teams, even if they're totally third wheeling and not doing much of relevance. I promised you some more Jake Walman talk earlier. He is currently on a bit of a heater. He has 6 points in his last 2 games. He had 3 assists Monday and a goal and 2 assists Tuesday. Definitely helping someone's fantasy week so far. Happens to be me in a few leagues. The only issue I have with him is he's kind of on and off of power play one, so I'm not like banking on it. But even without that, I think he's a 40-point defenseman with like 2.5 hits plus blocks per game, like a little bit over one of each. And he's 2.5 to 3 shots per game, like pretty impressed with what he's been doing. And he had some flashes of relevance in Detroit, and he's now playing more time on ice than he was. So you can kind of expect that peripherals to tick up. Are you into Jake Walman kind of long-term here? I was surprised that he was available in one of my leagues.
Something I have to keep an eye on is that his blocks seem to be drying up. He had a lot at the start of the year, but in the last, 5 games played, not including the game tonight because it hasn't started yet, he only has 3 total blocks in those 5 games. That's really what worries me. He still has his shot total up, so that is nice, but without the blocks, he needs the point. And as you mentioned, you're not going to get your 3-point nights. I saw a tweet yesterday where he played 200 some games. He had 1 3-point night in those 200 games, and now he has 2 back to back. So obviously, you know, different situation, more playing time, he's going to be in a position to get points. But unless those blocks come back, I have a really short leash because I'm not sure I'm even in a categories league where I have him. If he's only giving me shots, I could find a defenseman that just gives me shots if those points start to dry up.
That's fair. I think I'm in a bit of a different position because all of my teams are light on defense. Like, Walman's my second defenseman out of 4 in one league. And I think in Kakupful, Owen Power's my second defenseman. So I run it pretty thin on the blue line. I like Wallman. I will continue to like Wallman until he stops getting ice time, which the Sharks would be dumb to stop giving him ice time. You mentioned the blocks went down. I actually wonder if that's because he's been getting less shorthanded time. Early in the season, he was getting 50 to 70% of the shorthanded time. Now it's down to 30 to 50. So I think that's PK2 versus PK1. Shorthanded is great opportunities to get some blocks. Next up, another cold streak. Actually, this one, we have it as two cards, but I think it's really one topic. The entire Boston Bruins team is cold. Pasternak, Lindholm, McAvoy, like Zaka. How many points does Zaka have this year? That's a name I haven't heard all season. What are we doing with Boston? Like, what are your concerns or assurances to give us here?
Honestly, this is the way I look at Boston right now is how people feel about a lot of the Edmonton guys is that the bigger names I'm talking about, probably McAvoy, Marchand, and say Pasternak, you're just going to have to take your medicine and hold them and hope for the best, because I don't think you're going to get any value from a trade, or at least maybe Pasternak, because, like, for example, I think you might be able to get someone for there, but for like your Marchands and your Lindholms and your McAvoys, you're not going to get any value from a trade from them unless you find a Boston fan that's in love with them. And I don't know if I have, other than maybe Lindholm, I'm not sure if I have the guts to drop them in a deepish league. But for all of the ancillary pieces, I'm not sure I have, like, you'd have to show me who you have as an alternative, but I'm not sure I'm willing to keep any of the ancillary pieces. And as well, to keep in mind is that Montgomery is going in full blender mode, so I don't know. You can't say, oh, Zaka's top power play, because he could be off of that power play by the end of the game, because they're just getting hammered so bad that there's no guarantee of ice time for basically anyone on this team.
I like Lindholm still, just because he's been hitting and blocking a bunch, which is kind of weird. I don't think he's going to continue to do that, but at least while he is, I guess I'll keep on to it. McAvoy, Pasternak, you have to keep, but anyone else, maybe consider moving on from. Hard to move on from someone like Marchand or Zaka that you had higher hopes for. But like I said, I kind of wonder if this is the year that Boston is just fading into the abyss. Last but not least, we have one more cold team. Who is that?
The irony is the coldest of cold, in at least fantasy-wide, is your Calgary Flames. Is that they did have like a nice start to the year. I remember the Mega Show talking about Huberto potentially being a hold and it being interesting. Now, to get into a little bit of the weeds, I know Kakupful, keeping Carlson Ultimate Patron Fantasy League, is a baggers league and a points league. So we take a value of hits and blocks. And in general, this is kind of just the way to look at it is if you have on average 4 Kakupful points a game, you're seeing it as a season-long hold, or at least worth a roster spot and not just a streamer. And I did this morning, is if you look at, for the last 2 weeks, the players that are above that 4-point average, there's literally 2 players, and I guarantee you, I could give the audience an hour. You might get one, because he's on a hot streak, but you wouldn't guess the other. They are Rasmus Anderson and Blake Coleman. And on top of it, Blake Coleman's probably there because he had like a 2-point game and a goal like right on the edge of that 14-day span. So probably like in a 3 or 4 days, he'll just crater into like a point two, like 2.5 average. So the way I look at this is that I'm even less enthused about this team versus Boston, because at least with Boston, you know, Pasternak, Marchand, and McAvoy, like, they're going to have to lead on them. But the way that this team is designed, they basically have, like, a top... They're trying to be almost like Seattle, but with less skill overall. So, as I said, Anderson, he's hot, and he's getting a lot of hits and blocks, so I'm fine with him. Uyghur, same idea. He's not at that 4-point average, but you ask less for defensemen, and he's on power play 1. I'll include him. And then Kadri, he shoots and he does a lot. I'm fine with him. Those three are like the onlys that I could tell you that I'd be 100% fine keeping. The rest, maybe say add in Sharangovich because he was just injured the whole time. He maybe, you know, might need to find out more. I would be perfectly open. Now, obviously, each team is in a different situation to have everyone else on the waiver wire. Like, some might be able to be capped for different situations, but like, if I saw any of the other players on a waiver wire, I would not be surprised.
I actually have higher on Blake Coleman than you. He was a 4.8 cutful player last year. Granted, he kind of shot the lights out. Like, I think he had 30 goals on an 18% shooting percentage. But Coleman has always been the type of guy who's going to get you 2.5 to 3 shots per game, a hit to 2 hits per game, and close to a block per game. That alone is enough to keep you relevant and cupful, I think, especially when the rest of the team kind of sucks. So it's kind of funny you comparing them favorably to Seattle's depth. Like, not very often that I hear Seattle having more talent than someone, but I was glad to hear that. I'm also less sold on Rasmus Anderson as a long-term guy. I don't think he was ownable last year, if I remember correctly, but also Uyghur kind of went nuts and they had Hanifin for a significant amount of the season. So maybe I just haven't adjusted my view there. If you're in a league that counts hits and or penalty minutes, Pospisil is particularly interesting. In Kakupfel, you don't get points for penalty minutes, nor do you get enough points for hits. So wouldn't be doing that, but he seems to be a darling of their coaching staff. They put him out there all the time. And with that, I think it's time to take us out. Thank you for joining us. If you enjoyed the show, please consider joining the Keeping Carlson patron group at keepingcarlson.com/patron. You can play in the Keeping Carlson Ultimate Patron Fantasy League that we just talked about, interact with Brian, Elon, myself, Shams, and all the other people you hear on the mic. Please check out www.gamedaytweets.com to get all the best info from Twitter without having to slog through the rest of the crap on Twitter. It includes team-by-team and searchable tweets by player name and predicted goalie starts, I believe courtesy of Elon himself. Visit that site and the other great sites we use to research our episodes with at Yahoo, Frozen Tools, and Natural Stat Trick. Our intro and outro music was created by Pat Roach. Until we see you next time, play smart and keep your shifts short.